preventing pain, fear, and suffering of animals through nationwide education and awareness. From all across the globe, this is Animal Radio Network.
And welcome to our annual Animals in the Arts special. Woo-hoo! We'll hear from a 74-year-old chimpanzee that paints today.
Wow.
Also, we'll hear about music created by pink dolphins.
Pink dolphins? Are those like pink elephants?
No, no relation, because these are real pink dolphins.
Wow.
But first, in the headlines, there's been a couple of pit bull attacks in both Los Angeles and New York this week.
That's not good.
And that only heats up legislation, breed-specific legislation and bans. From Animal People magazine, animal advocate and editor Merritt Clifton joins us. Well, hello, Merritt. How are you doing?
Good morning.
Good morning. Reading the last Animal People and some concern that actually has been around for a long time about pit bulls. There's been several maulings this month on both the East Coast and West Coast with, pit bull maulings, one in California just a couple of days ago. What's going on, Merritt?
Well, pit bulls have proliferated to the point that there's about five times as many as there were as recently as 1999, probably around 10 times as many as there were 20 years ago, based on mentions of breeds in classified ads. I've gone back and researched them in newspapers going all the way back to 1900. With that proliferation of pit bulls, who are a breed capable of killing or maiming in their first bite, first attack, you, of course, have far more killing and maiming going on than when you didn't have that many of those kinds of dogs around.
Well, now there's a lot of breed-specific legislation going on, and I'm curious as to what you think about that. My thought has always been that it's the how a pit bull is trained or brought up that
historically that just doesn't check out.
Okay,
I've been keeping a log of breed-specific attack data since 1982, which is longer than I've had any particular awareness of pit bulls being a factor in it, but they certainly emerged very early. And what emerged almost from the first year and has been very clear ever since is that every year, regardless of how many total attacks there are, and that has in fact been going up, dog attacks that require hospitalization or somebody die from have really gone up all the way across the boards. But roughly half each year are by pit bulls, who make up a very small portion of the population. And if you look at the data on attacks on children versus attacks on adults, which I think is very indicative, there are only a couple of breeds that are as likely to kill or maim an adult as a child. Usually it's about 3-to-1 children, because children are down on the floor horsing around with the dog. Children are smaller than the dog, not as high in the dominance hierarchy, all those kinds of things. When you see adults also being attacked with a very high degree of frequency, you're seeing an animal that doesn't have the normal canine inhibition against attacking somebody who's bigger and nominally the head of the pack or the household or whatever. Now, also in the log that I keep, I exclude attacks by dogs who have been trained to fight or to guard or for police work, because those are dogs whose behavior has been modified. What I'm interested in are dogs who have been kept more or less as the average American household pet is kept. Now, that's obviously not often ideal. Most dogs are still not kept in ideal conditions. Too many are still chained out back and that kind of thing. Nonetheless, that is the way that the dogs are commonly kept, and we're not seeing other breeds pop up with that kind of pattern.
So what you're saying is basically that the pit bull and perhaps the husky are more aggressive dogs regardless?
Well, aggression's not the issue.
Okay.
In terms of bite frequency, a pit bull doesn't bite any more often relative to numbers than the average dog. It's pretty much right on the average line there. The issue is that it does a great deal more damage when it does attack and tends to keep attacking. The most frequently biting dogs are the very little dogs, who are typically reactive fear biters and just aren't big enough or strong enough to really do serious damage most of the time, and herding dogs, who do what's called the guiding nip, where they will bite at an extremity to, what they're trying to do is turn you away, turn you away from something that they view as dangerous either to the puppies you're approaching or the household you're approaching or to themselves, or in many cases, to you. They think you're approaching a danger if you're a small child or something, and they try to turn you, exactly like you see the dogs turning the sheep in the film Babe.
Mm-hmm.
And when someone who's unfamiliar with dogs then pulls away suddenly, which is understandable, the serration of the dog's teeth will cause a flesh wound.
Yeah.
But that's not the same thing as the bite that kills or maims somebody.
So they aren't necessarily being more vicious. They just, their makeup, their build, they're stronger. And they're just necessarily, you think...
Well, there's two things going on with pit bulls. One is the lack of inhibition, and the other is they are bigger and stronger.
Mm-hmm.
When you get those two things combined, they're also very highly reactive, and they're not unique in that. But what's unique is that if a collie has a bad day, somebody gets bitten. If a German Shepherd has a bad day, somebody gets bitten a bit more severely. But if a pit bull has a bad day, the first bite may kill or permanently maim somebody.
So they're not necessarily being more aggressive. They could be just very protective of their guardian or something. But just
any of the reasons why dogs bite can come up with a pit bull, but the damage is proportionally much worse.
Okay.
Do you think the legislation to keep pit bull breed out of New York City is good or bad?
Well, it worked very well for a very long time. People are not really aware that the National Humane Community, led by the American Humane Association, during the first half of the 20th century, very strongly pushed for banning pit bulls to suppress dog fighting. In humane textbooks, it was referred to as a problem of the past that had basically been eliminated. Mm-hmm. It was in the post-World War II era, 1940s, early 50s, that it had apparently been wiped out, eradicated, and gone. And now all of a sudden it was back in new communities. It was back in connection with the drug traffic, which had not happened before. And it's just really exploded out of hand.
What do you see for the future?
Well, first of all, the National Humane Community is going to have to realize that opposing breed-specific legislation was one of the stupidest things that it ever did. And it's going to have to look at what kinds of breed-specific legislation will work. There are a lot of experiments being undertaken. Some of them look promising. Some of them have run afoul of the courts, as recently in Ohio, where one of the oldest breed-specific laws still on the books was struck down at an appellate level. It has not yet gone to the Ohio Supreme Court, and it may follow the same pattern as in Colorado, where legislation was struck down, also older legislation was struck down at the appellate level, but then was upheld by the state Supreme Court. Now, there's a lot of ways you can go breed-specific without it being an outright breed ban, and that also has to be looked at. People tend to try to look at breed-specific legislation and say, this is a breed ban, this is saying we have to kill all the dogs. Not really. This is that you have to recognize that not all dogs are created equal. You're talking about a species that range all the way from teacup poodles up to Great Danes, and they really do have very different requirements. And it's only logical to have legislation that recognizes some of the differences there.
The always controversial Merrick Clifton, editor of Animal People, news for people who care about animals. How can we subscribe, Merritt?
You know, give me a call, 360-579-2505. I'll be happy to send you a free sample copy or take your subscription order, or just go to our website, www.animalpeoplenews.org, and you'll find the subscription and sample ordering information all right there.
Very, very good. We appreciate your time today. And we'd love to hear from listeners at 1-866-405-8405. Merritt, we'll talk to you soon. There's more Animal Radio on the way.
Hi, this is Patrick the English Setter. I've been working on my autobiography called Patrick the Wayward Setter. It's perfect for kids of all ages. Even Grandma loves the stories. Go see my mom's website at www.rightinyourearproductions.com. There you can see my other books and CDs and even see some of the nice things humans have said about my mom. Each time someone visits our website, I get a bone. Visit www.rightinyourearproductions.com. Man's best friend needs more bones.
preventing pain, fear, and suffering of animals through nationwide education and awareness. From all across the globe, this is Animal Radio Network.
Animal Radio is brought to you by Right In Your Ear Productions, home of Patrick the Wayward Setter. This fantabulous tool has been proven to be inspirational to children and teachers alike. To learn more, visit their website at www.writeinyourearproductions.com. That's write, W-R-I-T-E, in your ear, productions.com. 1-866-405-8405. Hi, who's this?
This is Kathy from New Mexico.
Hi, Kathy. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
How can we help you?
Well, I tell you what, I just heard some conversation about banning pit bulls, and
yeah.
I just don't understand it. I think that just like children and that turn bad, it's the responsibility of the parent, it's the responsibility of the parent of the dog. And if you train that dog, he's a chihuahua, he's still going to bite somebody if you train him the wrong way.
So you don't think it's wonderful. Actually, you don't think it's actually the animal, you think it's the person?
No, I do not. I think that pit bulls are loving animals. They're very good with children. It depends upon how you raise them.
Okay. We appreciate your comments today. 1-866-405-8405.
We'd love to hear your thoughts.
This week we're talking about pets and the arts. In both literature, whether it be paintings, animals that are artists.
Yeah, that paint themselves.
We have a chimpanzee in just a few minutes that paints a little bit. We have Catherine Greer on the phone with us. She's the author of Pets in America. How have animals been affected by arts?
Animals have long been a really important subject for the arts. There is a tremendous amount of popular literature, really as early as the 1700s, that featured animals as not just as the protagonists of the stories, but were told in the first person in the animal's voice.
Who are some of the authors that were influenced by their animals that we might know of?
Well, Mark Twain.
Okay.
Mark Twain was a real cat lover, a real animal lover, and he writes some very one of the stories that people are less familiar with of his was he wrote a very important story called A Dog's Tale that was against experimentation on animals.
Which is interesting because that's really very early on.
Yes, it is. That was published in 1906.
Have you heard of Tarzan's cheetah? Cheetah, we're actually going to be talking to Guardian in just a few minutes.
Didn't Cheetah just have his birthday?
Yes.
He turned 74.
I just think that's incredible. And he had a birthday party. And, you know, he's not the only painting animal.
Oh, tell me.
The elephants at the San Diego Zoo, I think, may be the most famous elephant painters. But they clearly have the ability to see at least a certain amount of color.
Mm-hmm.
And they will paint things, sort of abstracts that are in the colors of the things that are around them.
Wow.
And they have used that as fundraisers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Some of these zoos have used it as fundraisers in the past.
What a great idea. I would love to have some of that artwork hanging around here at the studios.
Yeah, I think so. I've always liked it, too. I especially like the idea that it's a way to let you see that they are looking at their world, and they're looking at it hard, just like we do.
There is a traveling exhibition. I'm not sure. Is it related to the book at all, Pets in America?
Yes, it is. It is just wrapping up its run in South Carolina, where it opened. And its next stop is the Indianapolis, the State Museum for Indiana in Indianapolis. And it will be there for the spring and the summer. And then it's going to about five or six other venues. And if your listeners would like to find the schedule for it, they should type in Pets in America as one word, .org, and they will bring up the website for the exhibit. And one of the most important objects in it is one of the very first bags of kitty litter.
Oh.
That's a very important object.
Yes,
and a very
is.
Rare object, I must say.
Yes, wow. It is. In the ever-changing landscape of litter and elimination.
Yes.
Well, we're actually having a show coming up on, July 1st. It's our Litter Palooza show.
Oh, I'll have to make sure I listen into that because that's a very important topic at my house, too.
Catherine, we appreciate your time. Hopefully you
Thanks
won't be a stranger.
Lot.
We'll speak to you again.
Hi, this is Sammy St. Croix. Sitting in with me is the author of many writings and several successful publications, Diane Ganser, of www.writeinyourearproductions.com.
Hello, Sammy.
You've written many articles, poems, short stories, and now books. Is it safe to assume that the writing bug has gotten a hold of you?
It sure has, Sammy. I've written many small things over the years, but nothing quite as dynamic as when I started the Patrick the Wayward Setter series.
How were you able to choose certain subjects to write about?
Well, I developed a fictional story of my own English setter, Patrick. Then I selected a publisher and my manuscript was accepted. The sequel, called Patrick the Miracle, came out 5 months later.
You're a bit of an extremist, aren't you?
Well, I was told that by some radio DJ who called to interview with me. So, here I am.
You're welcome.
I'm so glad we've stayed in touch since your original radio program. These projects have literally spiraled into so many other endeavors, which can be seen at our website.
www.writeinyourearproductions.com.
Hey, thanks. Our books and CD combo is great for classrooms, which many teachers are finding out.
So the combination of listening to your CD while reading along with the books, in tandem, is helpful for the teachers as well as the students.
That's what I understand from people who work with children, but especially for those that have learning disabilities. We've also found a great outlet through the Ronald McDonald Houses all across the nation, as well as the St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Memphis.
Those are some mighty big sponsors.
Yes, they are. Thank you.
What can people expect when they tap into your website, www.writeinyourearproductions.com?
Ease of navigation, Sammy. Seriously, though, we have Summer School Blues, third in the Patrick series. Another is Stories of Hope 2, Heartwarmers. The first, Stories of Hope, was so well received, we're working on another. A couple others are Your Pets, Your Pals, Tales for Tots. A huge project is Llama Tales, Ricky's Big Adventure, and Hope Survives. Another release, which is coming out very soon, and the hardest project I've had to endure thus far, is called The Ugly Side of Pretty. This is an informational documentary with a story tied in about the animal lab testing and the unnecessary cruelty that has been swept under the rug for far too long. The Ugly Side of Pretty will be released as a DVD by 2007.
This is incredible. You really have done a lot in two short years, right?
Right.
Wow. More than a lot of people accomplish in a lifetime. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. I'd like to wish the best to everyone that's been supportive of our project so far. All in all, this has been extremely rewarding. I'm looking forward to adding to our project list.
Marvelous. Thank you, Diane Ganser. To find out all there is about Patrick and what makes him tick or flee, as well as other projects in the works, please visit us at www.writeinyourearproductions.com. For myself, Diane Ganser, and writeinyourearproductions.com, this is Sammy St. Croix.
Hey, this is Cesar Milan. When I'm not doing the dog whisper, I'm listening to Animal Radio. Stay balanced.
We have on the phone with us Dan Westfall. He is the guardian operator of an organization called CHEETAH, which is an acronym. Dan, what is the acronym?
CHEETAH is the Creative Habitats of Endangered and Threatened Apes.
Okay, very good.
Did I say that right?
I believe you did.
I think sometimes I have to have it in front of me.
Yeah, I understand. We know that CHEETAH is there, and CHEETAH is from Tarzan. Uh-huh. Also, I believe, isn't he like the oldest primate, the oldest?
Yes, he holds the Guinness World Record for the oldest non-human primate at the age of 74. He received it when he was 69.
And that just happened, though. But he just turned 74.
Yes, uh-huh.
He had a wonderful birthday, I understand.
Oh, he had a lot of people here, and he come out, and he loves an audience. He come out and had he's a diabetic, so he had his diabetic cake,
good,
you know, and his diet soda, and he just had a ball. And matter of fact, Spain come over, a film festival from Spain, and honored him a comedy award.
Oh, wow.
And it was just, they wanted us to come over there, and I said, well, we don't travel anymore. He doesn't travel anymore, so they come over here and award him this wonderful award, and in next month they're honoring CHEETAH at the film festival. It's the main film festival in Spain, and then I'm going over to Spain to present them with one of CHEETAH's paintings. They're flying me over there to present the film festival to one of CHEETAH's paintings to the film festival.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to talk about. That's why I called today. Is CHEETAH is a very good painter.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes, yes.
When did CHEETAH pick up the brush?
Oh, gosh, I think 1993. And we've just sent him around the world. And we've just been going crazy this last week after his birthday. We've just had tons of requests coming in. And, of course, all the money, we're a nonprofit organization.
Uh-huh.
All the money goes to support the animals.
Oh,
here.
So we're selling the artwork of CHEETAH, and it's benefiting CHEETAH.
He loves to paint, and he whips them out fast. He doesn't. It's not like you or me. We'd sit back and study a little bit, you know. He just boom, 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 boom. Next, you know.
Does he have a certain subject, a certain item that he paints?
No, it's just abstract, but we trademarked the name Apestract.
Apestract. Apestract art.
So it's anything and everything.
Does he have favorite colors?
He just loves all the bright colors. Uh-huh.
Do you have a website that we can check out some of these?
Yes. Yes, it's www.cheetahthechimp.org. That's C-H-E-E-T-A. thechimp.org, all one word.
Well, it sounds like you're having a lot of fun there. It's
we just monkey around all
yeah.
the time. Yeah, we have a ball, and he's my buddy. He's amazing. He still has every tooth in his head.
Uh-huh.
74 years old, so
wow.
Is he as spry as ever?
Oh, yes. Yeah, he's really active. For his age, he's really active and gets around a lot, climbs around a lot, and when he's in the house, he raids the refrigerator a lot, so I got to watch him because of his diabetes, you know.
Yes.
That's his favorite thing is eating. Then comes the painting.
Yes, yes.
Uh-huh. What is the average lifespan of a chimp?
Well, in the wild, 40 is up there, 40, 45. They may go a little older in captivity, between 50 and 60.
Wow.
It depends. People have often asked me, why has he lived so long?
Yes, what is his secret?
Well, being in captivity is the main thing, and never had to fight for food or anything. Mm-hmm. Always had good food, good loving care, not much stress, actually. And I have a friend here in town. He's 102 years old. He still drives a car, and people says, wow, why? You know, well, it's in his genes, you know, so I'm sure it's in Cheetah's genes that he's lived this long as long as he has, you know.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Okay. Dan, we appreciate you spending time with us, and give Cheetah a big hello from all of us here at Animal Radio, will you?
Sure will. Yeah, thank you so much.
There you go.
Thanks for calling. Yeah.
Animal Radio is brought to you by Quicken Home Loans. Now, listen up. I actually did this myself. I had a house. I mortgaged it. Decided to lower my mortgage rates 35%. And you can do that, too, with a quick and simple loan. Lower your mortgage up to 35%. Here's a phone number for you. 1-800-314-1033. Once again, that's 1-800-314-1033. That's the number you need to know. Now, coming up, pink dolphins?
I don't believe it.
Yes, they do exist, and they're actually the muse for a CD that a friend of ours put together. That's next, right here on Animal Radio.
I said enough! Hey, gang, this is the Money Man, Eddie Money. Make sure you spay to your pets and keep the dial right here to Animal Radio. It's the greatest station in the world.
The Animal Minute is brought to you by Doggone It Lawn Repair and Gee Whiz for dogs, natural and organic. Doggone It Lawn Repair heals yellow spots in your lawn, while Gee Whiz prevents urine burns before they start. Available at local pet stores, grocery stores, or lawn and garden stores. To learn more, visit www.earthsbalance.com.
Dogs or cats, horse or emu, animals are people too.
A Long Island dad is in the doghouse after stealing a tiny chihuahua while on a daddy-daughter day excursion. 27-year-old Nicholas Savoia started by taking his toddler daughter to Chuck E. Cheese and then had what he described as a lapse in judgment when he went across the street to a pet shop and shoplifted a chihuahua worth $1,600, hiding the little pooch behind his daughter's body. He then repented and returned the 2-pound dog with an anonymous tip, which sparked the interest of families who all wanted to buy Georgie, the little photogenic puppy. Savoia, who is now pleading not guilty, was tracked down by surveillance cameras and was charged with grand larceny. I'm Britt Savage for Animal Radio.
Animals are people too. Animal Radio.
You work hard to keep your lawn green, so stop chasing your dog around to prevent those yellow spots. Doggone It Lawn Repair heals lawns from dog or cat urine without reseeding or resodding. You can even prevent urine burns before they start with Gee Whiz for dogs. Both Doggone It and Gee Whiz, all natural and organic products, are available at local pet stores, grocery stores, or lawn and garden stores. To have the best lawn on the block, visit www.earthsbalance.com. That's earthsbalance.com.
Preventing pain, fear, and suffering of animals through nationwide education and awareness from all across the globe. This is Animal Radio Network.
It is our arts, books, literature special, and of course that includes CDs.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking with Skip Haines from the Laurel Canyon Animal Company. Your latest release, music from the Pink Dolphins.
That's right.
Is it really from Pink Dolphins?
Yeah, we, you know, since our last CD, The Songs to Make Dogs Happy, we now use animal, telepathic animal communicators all the time to communicate with animals to create music. That's what our company does.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, so explain the process of creating something.
Well, when we did Songs to Make Dogs Happy, we actually put focus groups of dogs together and we used an animal communicator and tested out the lyrics and the music with the dogs and adjusted them according to the dogs' responses.
Wow.
And it's been extremely successful. The CD is doing phenomenally well. Dogs love it. I was amazed, but dogs love it.
Is your primary demographic animals, or is it the two-legged type?
It's both.
Okay.
It's actually both, because you have to, you know, dogs don't have credit cards. But it's for both. And that process works so well that we expanded it on this, and we're working with an author named Cy Montgomery. We're also putting her book out. It's called Journey of the Pink Dolphins.
Mm.
And Cy actually has, these are pink river dolphins that live in the Amazon River.
They really exist?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
They live in the Amazon River in the rainforests of Brazil and Peru and Ecuador.
So they're not like pink elephants?
No, they're not. They're actual pink dolphins. And not all of them are pink, but as they get older, they get pink. They're river dolphins. And they do exist. And we hired three animal communicators over a period of 5 months to communicate with these dolphins, and basically what we ask them to ask the dolphins is, would you like to participate in what we're doing? And if so, do you have anything to say?
Uh-huh.
And this CD is based on the dolphins' responses through the communicators and working with Cy Montgomery. We also have acquired one of the only existing recordings of a vocalization of a wild pink river dolphin.
And we can hear that on the CD.
It's on the CD. It's the only place in the world. Nobody's ever heard this before. We hadn't heard it. And the interesting thing about these dolphins, they got trapped in the Amazon River when the Andes Mountains rose, like 8 million years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So their vocalizations are the ancient language of the dolphins. Now, the legends on these dolphins are amazing. They're supposed to be shapeshifters. They're supposed to turn into humans and lure human beings into this underwater city called the Encante, where you can never leave, but things are better. It's a better place, and these dolphins are called Encantados, enchanted ones.
Lose any investigators or any people while they were out there?
Well, you know, if you go to the website, we're hooked up with the most amazing people in the world with this. We also, profits, not all profits, obviously, but portions of the profits from this go to the Rainforest Conservation Fund, which is an organization that, you know, helps tropical rainforests reseed and so forth. It's going to the International Society for the Preservation of the Tropical Rainforest. They're just the most amazing animals, and it's the most amazing thing that we've ever done.
Now, were the lyrics either written by the dolphins or inspired by the dolphins?
Well, some of them were inspired. Some of the lyrics we wrote with Cy Montgomery, the author of the book, and one song, which is called Anima Mundi, which means Soul of the World.
Mm-hmm.
The entire lyric is transmissions from the dolphins.
Wow.
And it was pretty amazing. I have to say, you know, we hired communicators. We didn't tell them that other communicators were working on it. And there were three or four things that came up consistently with all the communicators when they said they were speaking for the dolphins. And they said the dolphins had a message for mankind. That's what we were told. So we put that all in the CD.
What is their message?
You have to listen to CD for that one.
how exciting. You every time you put out a CD, it's always very creative and very much a home run for all of us here at Animal Radio.
Oh.
From the Laurel Canyon Animal Company, music from the Pink Dolphins. Okay, before we go, remember everything you've heard today at animalradio.com, all the links. And just in case you didn't know yet, 24 hours of fresh programming.
Woohoo!
If animals are your bag, you want to tune it to animalradio.com. Listen at work. Your boss won't know. Just turn it on low.
Heck, he might even come over and join you.
He might turn on his computer to animalradio.com. Before we go, remember,
spay or neuter.
Never buy from a breeder.
And if you get a cat, don't declaw.
We'll see you next week for more Animal Radio. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.